Okay.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Okay. So good morning, everybody. Thank you all for joining us remotely or in person. This is our second TAG meeting for our contaminant removal from landfill gas project. I'm Nada El-Sayed. I'm going to give you an overview of what we've been doing experimentally. And I have Tony Elwell here with me. He will talk about some of the modeling that we've been doing. So let's go ahead and get started. Can everyone hear me okay for those of you joining us remotely?
Yes.
Yes, this is Matt Young. I can hear you fine.
Yeah, this is Young, and I can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. And I think Yolanda and Ms. Oswald both can hear us also. Okay, great. Okay, so the motivation for our work, basically, as you all know, fossil fuels are a finite resource. And here in the U.S., we rely heavily on foreign oil. So finding a U.S.-based alternative is crucial. It's no longer an option. It's probably a necessity right now. Furthermore, we know that increasing amounts of greenhouse gases are constantly being emitted, and we need to find ways to mitigate this. And according to the EPA, to the alternative fuel mandate, they would like to see about 36 billion gallons per year used by 2022. When we say alternative fuel, what are we? What exactly do we mean? Some of the alternative fuel types that are being used right now include solar energy, wind energy, geothermal energy. There's nuclear energy, but also biomass energy, which is what we would like to focus on. And the beauty of biomass is that it produces biogas, and it comes from a variety of different sources. It comes from agricultural crops, animal wastes, sludge digesters, industrial residues, and also municipal solid waste, which is the target source for biogas. But regardless of the source of the biogas, it is roughly equal parts of methane and carbon dioxide. However, some types of biogas will also have contaminants, such as the case of municipal solid waste biogas, which also has some air and some impurities. So in general, carbon dioxide is known as a very important greenhouse gas, but methane also is an important greenhouse gas. Actually, it happens to be the second most abundant greenhouse gas. Pound for pound is actually 20 times more powerful than CO2 in the sense that it traps radiation more efficiently. So over a 100-year period, methane will have more than 20 times the effect on the atmosphere than CO2 would. It can be used for ammonia synthesis, methanol production, and more, and it is emitted from a variety of sources, from natural gas and petroleum, enteric fermentation, wastewater remediation, but also from landfills, which is why I have that circled there, because that's the target source for methane that we will focus on. And what the scale that we're talking about is, we're talking about in 2013, there was approximately 654 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent methane that got emitted into the atmosphere. And that number is expected to just continue to rise with our increased consumption of oil and increased population. So why municipal solid waste? Here in the U.S., we generate more than 250 million tons of municipal solid waste every year. The biogas that's produced by municipal solid waste is known as landfill gas. To give you an idea of the scale, 1 million tons of municipal solid waste is able to generate approximately 12,000 meters cubed per day of landfill gas, and it can continue this generation for 20 to 30 years. Again, this depends on the landfill and on a variety of different conditions. However, currently less than 15% of that is utilized for energy. And being here in Florida, we have a geographic advantage because we produce approximately 7% of municipal solid waste. So that's also an added advantage for us. So landfill gas right now is utilized in three main ways. It is converted to electricity or compressed into natural gas, but it can also be used for liquid fuels, and a lot of it gets flared as well. But again, before any processing can happen for the landfill gas, we need to take care of the contaminant issue. And landfill gas will have a variety of contaminants depending on the landfill source and what's in the landfill. But in general, the contaminants can be categorized into this table that you guys are seeing right now. We have sulfides, we have chlorides, we have VOCs like benzenes and halogenated compounds. There are certain alkanes and alkenes in there, some trace amounts of mercury compounds, but also siloxanes. And that's the target of this project. Now, siloxanes are an issue for a variety of reasons. Siloxanes are actually just compounds that are made of silicon, oxygen, and methyl groups. They could be linear or cyclic. And they are available in shampoos and like cell phone cases that are made of silica. And they're becoming more of an issue now because we're using these products a lot more now. And they get landfilled, and then now they're starting to decompose, and now they're starting to be an issue. So just doing a quick web search, we see that Web of Science search, that in the last 20 years or so, papers published about siloxanes have almost steadily increased, and the citations are also increasing. So what that tells us is that the siloxane use is increasing, contaminant regulations are increasing, and waste-to-energy tolerances are decreasing, so we know that it's just going to become more and more of an issue, and removal is going to be very necessary. It already is right now, but now there's more awareness that is growing on these issues. So because siloxanes can decompose into silica, they can cause heavy equipment damage. And they coat the equipment. They can also deactivate the reforming catalyst, which is one of the parts that we studied, and you will see in the next slides. But if you can see the picture right here, you can see on the left-hand side is clean equipment versus one that that's been subjected to a lot of uncleaned landfill gas. So the typical allowable concentrations for manufacturers right now is 2.8 milligrams per meter cubed. This limit was set forth because of siloxane decomposition effects on engine heads and spark plugs, etc. So now manufacturers are saying that for their warranty to remain in effect, they need to only have a maximum of 2.8 milligrams per meter cubed of siloxanes in the feed. So the goals of our project were twofold, actually. We wanted to evaluate some of the removal technologies and find the best technology in terms of cost effectiveness, waste production, and so on. We also wanted, once we know all these, to propose improvements to lower the capital operating costs, but we also needed to know the effect of siloxanes on the reforming catalyst. We know that siloxanes are very harmful to the equipment, and I showed that in the last couple of slides, but little literature is known about the effect on the reforming catalyst, and that's really one of the main things that we wanted to focus on. So to do that, we made a few assumptions. We assumed that we have a landfill gas flow rate of 2,500 standard cubic feet per minute. We assumed that the concentration of siloxanes in the feed is 5 milligrams per meter cubed, and that was literature varies, and it depends obviously from landfill to landfill, but that was in the middle range. We assumed we have a space velocity of 68,000 inverse hours. And then we had our catalyst density of about 1,700 kilograms per meter cubed. And obviously, our plant operates 24/7. So experimentally, what we did was for our reforming catalyst, and it was this was also a research effort that was funded by Hinckley in the last year. Our reforming catalyst is a series zirconia support, and it has nickel, magnesium, and doped with platinum. So what we did was we added a silica precursor onto the catalyst. We used Ludox. And then we tried three different poisoning amounts with respect to the silica. We tried 1 week, 1 month, and 6 months to simulate accelerated deactivation. And basically, Ludox is just for those of you who are not familiar with it, is a colloidal silica suspension. It has 40% by weight silica. So we just dissolved it in DI water, and we use ceramic crucibles to deposit it onto the catalyst. And then we use 350 degrees Celsius just to dry it, and then we calcined it at 600 degrees C. So if you look at the picture, I don't know if you can see it very well, but the left picture of the fresh catalyst is a very dark charcoal color compared to the right picture of the 6 months poisoned catalyst, and it's very, very, very light, almost white in color, and that's just after the silica was deposited. So visually, we know that the silica stayed on the catalyst. So when we did some of our calculations, our 1 week, I misspelled week there, sorry, our 1 week sample had a mass gain of 1.1%. Our 1 month sample had a mass gain of 10.5%. And our 6 month sample had a gain of roughly 62%. The first thing we wanted to do is we wanted to do a reduction, temperature program reduction experiment to see, because our reduction is an indication of our catalyst activity. So basically what we do is we flow simulated landfill gas over the catalyst and we check to see the water formation. So what you're seeing here is the formation of water, the mass to charge ratio of 18 versus temperature. And as you can see, the green line, let me try to get my laser pointer here. The green curve, that's the fresh catalyst, and it had a reduction temperature of about 242 degrees C. Just having a catalyst that is poisoned at 1 week had a reduction temperature that increased to 306 degrees Celsius, and it just continued to decrease from there, finally reaching 315 degrees C for 6 months. So we already know that our catalyst is adversely getting affected just by doing our reduction, our temperature program reduction experiments. Furthermore, we did BET surface areas, and what we saw was that increasing silica amount, so increasing poisoning amount, has increased our surface area because now there is the surface area of the silica being accounted for. So we also know, we also confirmed that the silica is on there. We did several characterization techniques just to confirm that we have silica onto the catalyst. Then we did X-ray diffraction studies, and as you can see from the arrows here, that we had silica deposited onto the catalyst, and we saw that in the 2 theta range of 22 to 24 versus the fresh catalyst at the very top that did not have any silica on it. The next characterization technique that we did was we did scanning electron microscopy on both the fresh and the poisoned catalyst, and if you look at the very first one, the fresh catalyst. I don't know if you can see the picture very well. It's a little grainy, but you can see that it's grainy, but it doesn't have any silica deposited on it. The 1 month starts to have silica deposition that is visible, even just under the microscope. The silica is very bright under the microscope versus compared to the 6 months where it's all basically almost, it's completely coating the catalyst. So it's extreme, it's very, very bright. It's very white. When we did EDS analysis to determine the species that we have, we saw that for the 1 month Ludox poison catalyst, we saw that we have a silica amount of about 8 weight percent. For the 6 months, our silica amount for the sample that we had was about 40%. So all of these characterization tools are telling us that we have poisoned the catalyst, and that increasing the poisoning amount does show up. We have more silica being deposited onto the catalyst. Then we did reaction studies on a dry reforming basis. And basically what this graph is showing, it is showing the conversion of methane and carbon dioxide, 10% conversion and 50% conversion for all of the samples, the fresh and the poisoned ones. So if you look at the first two sets of data, you could see that increasing poisoning amount has increased our reforming temperature, both at the 10% and the 50%. The same thing held true for CO2. An increase in poisoning has increased the reforming temperature. One of our goals was we wanted the reforming temperature to stay at or below 450 degrees Celsius. So having silica deposited on there did not adversely affect it. Our reforming temperature. So just to put this into perspective, our 10% reforming temperature for methane was 454 degrees Celsius using the catalyst that we have. Just having 1 week's worth of poisoning increased the 10% reforming temperature to 518 degrees C, so it's already outside the range that we want. And then it continued to increase, reaching a maximum of 587 for 10% conversion at 6 months. The same phenomena held true for CO2 conversion. But more importantly is that our syngas ratio decreased. So our products decreased. The ratio of our products decreased with increasing poisoning amount. For processes such as Fischer-Tropsch synthesis and so on, we need a high hydrogen to CO ratio of at least 2:1. So all of this has led us to the conclusion that cleanup, excessive landfill gas cleanup, is necessary for our catalyst system, not just for the equipment. And so that led us to the modeling part that Tony will talk about, where we simulated different parameters to see what kind of optimum parameters we need for the gas cleanup. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Tony.
So the reason we wanted to model before we did any experimental testing was, one, there was enough information in literature to start modeling, but also it's less expensive and much quicker to narrow down to more suitable results, because there's a bunch of possibilities you could have for this cleanup process. So we wanted to narrow it down to more suitable processes for further testing if that's necessary. And like I said, we could use that information for experimental testing. And then after that, we can use the most optimum cleanup processes for sizing and costing analysis to get some predictions for if it was used on the full-scale process. So we used COMSOL. As you can see, this is a picture of COMSOL. It's one of the simulations that was used for the analysis. It's just showing the concentration in the bed, the gradient, how it's affected, and I just chose at an arbitrary time to show how the concentration is increasing through the bed. So it's being absorbed. It's an absorption process that we modeled. And COMSOL allows for a parametric sweep, so we could choose however many parameters we want and different values for those parameters, and it will let us choose or test every single combination of those values. So we'll have a comprehensive process to narrow down to more suitable results later. So some assumptions that this COMSOL model that were made while using this modeling is that there's plug flow through the packed bed, but also that L2 is the only component that's absorbing. And the reason we chose L2 for the only one that's absorbing is because, one, that's what most of the literature data that is reported for absorption of siloxanes is on L2, but also because most of the larger siloxanes actually break down into the more simple siloxane L2. It's the most simple out of all the siloxanes. And we chose 2,500 SCFM of landfill gas flow. That's just the average landfill gas flow rate. And standard temperature and pressure, again, because literature values for adsorption is reported at these conditions. So we wanted to keep it what the literature had. And we had 10 beds in parallel with adsorbent in each bed, and also 24-inch diameter Schedule 40 pipes. And we did that because both of those were because we wanted to keep the velocity comparable to what's in literature, which was about 0.5 meters per second. So some of the variables that we chose for the parametric sweep, one was the adsorbent. We chose two commonly used adsorbents. It was activated carbon and silica gel. So each adsorbent has different characteristics for how it absorbs the siloxanes, so we could see which one is best. And we chose two of the common ones. Also, the bed height, we chose three different bed heights to vary. We wanted to see how that the pressure drop is affected, because as you get a larger packed bed, there'll be more pressure drop. but also we have increased cost with more, there'll be more absorbent with a larger bed, but also a larger or a longer bed life. So you won't have to replace it as frequently, but you would have to replace more, so it might cost more. So there's some trade-off for the bed height, and we wanted to optimize that for each potential process. The relative humidity was also varied as well, and this is because we know it affects the capacity of the adsorbent for the siloxanes. So we wanted to test and get some kind of optimum value for before actually the cleanup process, how much water we need to remove. And the inlet concentration of the siloxanes were also varied, and this is because it changes from landfill to landfill, so we wanted to choose, or we wanted to see how that affects it, and it will also affect our adsorbent amount that we need to clean up. And lastly, we chose the limit or the tolerance for siloxanes, which basically we did it for three applications, so landfill gas can be used for in engines, combustion engines, for catalysis, and then for fuel cells. So we had different, each of those come with different tolerances, how much siloxanes they can actually handle before issues happen. So we have those three tolerances as our kind of limit for the outlet of the process. So the first one I'll be going over is the adsorbent. What happened when we changed the adsorbent? We had silica gel and activated carbon. And this first graph shows the relative humidity on the x-axis versus the days to breakthrough. So the days to breakthrough is just how long it took to reach the limit for whatever stated limit it is for the application. So that's what our breakthrough is defined as. And as you can see, for activated carbon on this graph, you can see that it's much better than silica gel for adsorbing since it lasts longer for the days to breakthrough. It's higher for every case. So for all the next slides, the results I show will all be based on activated carbon. And then the inlet concentration, we chose three concentrations. We started with an average of 10 milligrams per meter cubed, and then we increased it by 50% and also decreased by 50%. So we had 5, 10, and 15 milligrams per meter cubed. And this graph shows the siloxane concentration versus the days to breakthrough. And there's three lines. Each of the lines represents one of the different tolerances. So each line basically represents a different application. 9.4 is for the engine application, and 0.94 was found in literature to be the limit for a catalyst, and also 0.094 was for fuel cells. So all the next graphs that I show will be in the same kind of format, having a line for each application, since we wanted to get some kind of optimum process for each application, so no matter what you want to use it for, we'll have some kind of costing done for it. So as you can see, as the siloxane concentration is increasing, the inlet concentration, the days to breakthrough starts decreasing, which makes sense. You have more siloxanes coming in for some amount of adsorbent. It will break through faster since you have more siloxanes. And then there are three bed heights that we chose, 10, 20, and 30 feet. And this graph is showing the results for that with the height on the x-axis and, again, days to breakthrough on the y. And as you can see, as you increase the bed height, you'll be increasing the amount of adsorbent, which gives you a longer bed life, so the days to breakthrough starts increasing. And then last, the relative humidity chosen was 0, 50%, and 100% relative humidity. And this graph is showing the results for that with the relative humidity on the x-axis. And again, it's the trend is for each application is the same. As you increase the relative humidity, the days to breakthrough decreases, and that's because the water starts dominating in the adsorption, and it leaves less adsorption for siloxanes to happen. So this shows us that we do have to remove the water to some extent before we can actually purify the landfill gas. And this graph, as we found in literature, is showing the adsorption factor versus the relative humidity. And so from this graph, we could choose an optimum relative humidity to actually change, because most landfills are 100% for moisture content. So we need to remove it to some amount. So this was the optimum amount that we found. It was 45%. And we chose this because we wanted to keep the adsorption factor up above 90. And as you can see, it might be hard to see from the lines, but it is above 90. We wanted to keep it to where it still can absorb a good amount of siloxanes. But also we didn't want to remove all of the water because it would be too expensive and way too hard to do that. So we wanted to have a reasonable relative humidity to decrease it to before the landfill gas cleanup. So what we can conclude is that experimentally we show the catalyst is adversely affected by the presence of silica, so there does have to be some kind of cleanup process for the landfill gas before you can flow it through the catalyst bed. And this table is showing the optimum parameters for COMSOL, so I said I did the parametric sweep, and from that parametric sweep we had a lot of results, so we can narrow it down to a suitable process for each application. So like I said earlier, the siloxane tolerance column all the way on the left, that represents each application. 9.4 is the engines, 0.94 is catalysts, and 0.094 is for fuel cells. And the inlet concentration for each of them, since we did 5, 10, and 15, we wanted it to be able to reach 180 days at least for our breakthrough. So we wanted the absorption beds to last 180 days, so 6 months for every single application, and then for up to 15 milligrams per meter cubed. And the relative humidity for each of those is chosen to be 45 with the adsorbent as activated carbon. So what we found was that for the highest tolerance for the engines, 10 feet for the bed heights, where it was good enough to remove the contaminants for at least 180 days. And then for the catalyst, 20 feet height is good enough to do that as well, and then 30 feet for the fuel cells. So these are the three that we can, the three narrowed down results that we will be costing and optimizing and sizing as well for further COMSOL studies. So we'd like to thank the Hinckley Center and all the TAG members as well for all the support through this project. And any questions?
I got a lot of questions on here. Well, I'll take a Google question.
Yeah.
Well,
for the TAG members joining us remotely, because I know you may have other engagements to get to. Anybody has a question?
Oh, yeah, sure. I have a question. We have two questions. Nice presentation, very nice work. The first question, I'll kind of go, the slide I saw most recently, when you showed, might have been on slide 29, at the different, so, siloxane loadings on the modeling component. One of the charts, there's nice modeling results, but I was unclear. It looked like based on the concentration, there was no change in the days to breakthrough. Yeah, so like on the green line, is it the slope is really low, or is that flat? Like,
the slope is, yeah, it is going down. It is hard to see because it's such a low tolerance, but it is going down for each inlet concentration. It's just a very low tolerance compared to the other ones.
Okay. I guess it to me that from 5 to 15, and maybe I'm not, I guess this is the result of the modeling. It's not just a straight adsorption process, because, my gut feel would be that if you've increased your concentration, you're days to breakthrough would decrease also by a factor of 3. I guess that's what I was kind of looking for, but that's not the case.
No, that's not what was found in when we did the modeling for COMSOL. No.
Okay.
So
yeah, I guess that's good that you have a good concentration and a range of concentrations. Yeah.
So when you increase the concentration, more actually is absorbing. So in COMSOL, we have, I had to set up an equation for the capacity and how it changes based on the relative humidity, which and also the concentration in of the siloxanes. So the adsorption, how it behaves, is different depending on the concentration as well.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. And then the second question I had, as long as I've got myself on now, was for Nada. You showed, when you were showing the basically change in the 10% conversion or 50% conversion temperature,
uh-huh,
that the catalyst deactivated as it was exposed to more siloxanes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my question was about the hydrogen to CO ratio, and so clearly there's a difference in that, and but those are all at 450, right?
Right.
And so I guess I was just wondering if you knew why there was a change in selectivity or what else was being produced, you know, if it's not just the dry reforming, you know, I don't know what other, I don't know, products or what's affecting that hydrogen to CO ratio.
Right. So there weren't any other products that we saw except some water. But that's because at that low temperature we have, you know, we have the reverse water gas shift that could be happening at that temperature. But there wasn't really anything else except hydrogen CO and some water.
Okay.
You also tested the catalyst without platinum in it, tested at a high temperature that you didn't show here, so like at 800 Celsius approximately.
Yeah, so that's right.
CO ratio is much higher at that,
yes,
temperature.
So, right, so Dr. Kuhn brought up an important point that I only showed one set of results because of the time constraint. I do have reaction data for the high temperature catalyst, so that was at 800 degrees Celsius. So that catalyst didn't have platinum; it just had nickel magnesium on it on the same support. And so because of thermodynamics at the low temperature, the low temperatures for the low temperature reforming catalyst, that was my hydrogen CO ratio. But at the high temperature, I had slightly better hydrogen CO ratios.
Okay.
I just didn't show that here.
Okay. Great. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So those are all my questions, at least for now. I think I'm pretty good. So I'll turn it over if anyone else has something that they'd like to ask. I'm going to put myself back on mute for a while. Thanks, Nada.
Thanks, Dr. Young.
This is Kelsey. I just had a question. Nada, I think you did your work at using a concentration of 5 milligrams per
right
cubic meter,
right?
But the just wondering why the change in the concentration was, why the UGIs changed the concentration from the one set of experiments to the modeling,
right? So for experimentally, we sort of did a survey of the literature to try and see the concentrations, and so we that's why we picked the 5, because it was somewhere in the middle. There was literature that had from 0.05 milligrams per meters cubed up until 10 milligrams per meters cubed. So experimentally, we wanted somewhere in the middle that was sort of what's the word I'm looking for? More on the higher end of things. We wanted a worst case scenario experimentally, but versus the modeling where we can play around with the different concentrations and we could just easily manipulate that. We wanted more sort of realistic, if I'm right, and please chip in if there's something that I'm missing.
The
concentration changes, that's right. So experimentally also, if I change my space velocity or if I change my flow rates, that would also affect how much siloxanes, how much silica would be on there. So I didn't show any of these calculations, but we submitted a manuscript that had some of these calculations in it. So changing my flow rates will also effect as if I had different different siloxane amount on there, silica amount on there. If you would like it, I can send you the what we submitted. It got submitted a couple of weeks ago, so I can send you that with some of the calculations in it. So that's for the experimental part.
Okay, is that going to end up getting posted on up onto the project site?
Okay. It's not going to get posted yet until it's published. So if you'd like it now, I can send it to you now, or at least send you the calculations if you'd like.
That's okay. I was just curious because you were using for the doing the next phase using 15, and it was such a much higher number than you used in the testing of the catalyst. So that was my only question, was why we had jumped it up to using such a high value for the next phase in the modeling.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Jana. I had a question regarding the next test. I think my understanding is that there's going to be costing done or feasibility study. That part was not very clear. If you could elaborate on that, what are the plans for costing? And then the other question is that, do you have an industry partner that you collaborate that they can benefit from your work? It's a great work, great presentation.
Thank you. So,
I know, I can talk about it. So, as far as the costing goes, so this was kind of like preliminary results in the last slide of showing those three more optimum, more reasonable values that we can further test using COMSOL and changing our relative humidity, of course, to 45 and actually getting what the height would be of the bed, or what we would need for that process for each individual case. So I'll be costing based on, so we'll have like the 10 pipes in parallel. So I'll be costing those as they are pipes. And then just based on values that we get online.
But you're costing for a scale.
Yes, but I'll be costing for the full scale process. So for the modeling is for the full scale process.
Okay.
So as
all right, thank you.
For each application.
And my other question was that, do you have an industry partner that you work with to get their input or so that they can benefit from your work?
Right now we do not have, we don't have funding from industry at the moment, but there are some TAG members who are in industry right now, so we're keeping them updated, but no funding sources from industry right now.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Nara. Great presentation. Thank you very much. I was wondering if you could go to please slide 17.
Sure.
So it seems that as you are simulating a higher amount of contaminants, the temperature starts increasing, right? But as you reach 6 months, it doesn't seem to be that much of a difference in temperatures between 6 months and 1 month. The difference maybe that it reduced much less. So I was wondering if you have any insight about what the trends could be beyond that, about higher than 6 months or in between 1 and 6.
Right, that's a really good question. So from the visual inspection and from the SEM images, the difference between 1 month and 6 months is the catalyst at 6 months, I think that's an exaggerated, a highly exaggerated amount. So the catalyst was already almost completely coated in silica. So that's basically, that might explain that it just reached a tolerance and then that's it. There's nowhere else for the silica to go. So I assume that if we go higher than 6 months, then we are still not going to see much change in the reduction or in the reaction, because I think that's just the tolerance of the catalyst and the amount of silica that we have on there. It's exaggerated amount, but there's nowhere else for the silica to go if we poison it anymore.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've got a simple question. So slide 29, were you doing that at dry conditions, or was that at a relative humidity of 45%?
So particularly for this one exactly, this one is showing zero, but I do have results for 0, 50, and 100, because COMSOL does the parameter sweep, so they have every single combination, but just for this presentation, I showed one. And this one in particular is zero.
But the model uses that curve for as long as less than 50%, it's going to be similar.
Yeah, it is very similar.
It's going to drop substantially.
That curve is very drastic.
I know.
So, the challenge Tony faces, very few people report the relative humidity when they do the adsorption experiment on the adsorption studies, and the numbers are all over the place for that reason. So he had to make some approximation that would affect the economy.
I mean, that's, from an application standpoint, a 45% relative humidity, what temperature do you need to be knocking out your landfill gas at?
Well, for at least for the next steps that I'll be doing, I'm assuming like it's going to be cooled to 5 Celsius. So then obviously some water will get knocked out, and it'll be at 100% relative humidity at 5 Celsius. But then it'll operate at like 25 Celsius or standard. So that it'll have some relative humidity there. And then if it needs to be further knocked down back to 5, then we can also have some kind of silica gel bed or something like that, if that answers your question.
No. And how are you measuring the siloxane? How do you measure the concentration of the siloxane? What analytical piece of equipment?
Oh, this isn't from, this is just modeling, yeah. So we didn't have it.
We did it by weight after we deposited onto the catalyst, then EDS. And then EDS that showed.
How are you measuring the concentrations are so low, we didn't run reactions like months.
Were you doing a bulk test?
Yeah, otherwise, yeah, exactly.
Mine was not experimental at all. Okay. I'm inputting values for COMSOL modeling. We don't have any experimental
really use BCA like this. So.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some people too, like, afterwards, they bubble it into some kind of absorbent, like Celexol, if you've heard, like it's like a liquid, and then try to measure the concentration. They try to do it in different ways, like that.
I think the humidity is where the other ones being experiments just neglect to measure. Yeah, it's very important, though.
Yeah, it is.
Numbers are all over the place.
Yeah.
That, and even if they run the same people run the same thing, when Tony knows the scatter, if they buy like 10 different types of activated carbon, the numbers are also some factor.
Yep. Yeah, there's
10 different, maybe 10 or 15.
There's a lot of variation in each. It's frustrating.
Sure. Yes, it is a discussion. Yes, that's a. People aren't necessarily using the best activated carbon or maybe treating it differently, and there's some unknown
the
challenge for them.
Not much is reported sometimes.
Modeling
and the literature that I have to use for the model, they don't report a lot sometimes. They don't even report the which activated carbon or what type it is at times. So.
Mm-hmm. The only person that asked a question, I guess.
Well, the questions I asked for were answered.
Okay.
You like a defense talk, you can ask something more.
Anybody who's joining us remotely, are there any more questions or clarifications or suggestions?
This is Dr. Young. nothing here.
Thanks, Dr. Young.
Good work. Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought you all did a great job putting this together.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Alzo.
I guess I do want a clarification.
There'll be a draft report everywhere.
So in February, we'll be sending out a draft final report of everything we've done for this project. So just be on the lookout for that.
No,
Well, thank you for attending.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Can you go back to that real quick?